It all began very casually.
Rock Scully, the manager of the Grateful Dead, dreamed up this whole thing with Keith Richards staying up late one night smoking California Sensimilla in London. I'm not sure how seriously Rock took it. Oh, yeah, man, we can fix it for you guys to play in the Golden Gate Park. But Keith remembered it.
So when the Stones embarked on their U.S. tour in the summer of 1969, the band wanted to cap it with that free show, Selvin says. But there were also some serious financial factors involved.
The whole problem with their financial situation and their management is really an important part of the context of why Altamont happened. They were broke. They couldn't get any money through their existing contracts because Alan Klein was bottlenecking the dough. So they needed to create a new company that he wasn't involved in order to make money, and that was the U.S. tour.
The Dead and the Stones approached the project quite differently, which scuttled the idea of having the concert in Golden Gate Park. It was then moved to Sears Point Raceway. But a disagreement over money there killed that plan, leaving just 36 hours to find another site, which turned out to be the Altamont Motor Speedway.
It was a ramshackle, decrepit, grade C racetrack, struggling to stay in business, and the guy grabbed an opportunity for what he thought was publicity, and he was as dumb as the Stones were about this. Naive is probably a better word for it.
In his book, Altamont, the Rolling Stones, the Hells Angels, and Rock's Darkest Day, Selvin documents the frantic, short-notice effort to relocate the event. And when the music played, he says, the concert experience varied surprisingly.
Down closer to the stage, the mood was very unsettled. People were very ungenerous. There was a lot of pushing and shoving, a lot of overcrowding, and a lot of really bad drugs. But it's also true that many, many people up on the hill had a great time.
But the cameras and musicians were all down front, as was the violence, including the stabbing death of gun-toting concertgoer Meredith Hunter, which a later court case ruled to be self-defense.
There were four died. It was Meredith Hunter. There was two in a vehicular manslaughter case, and there was some poor benighted soul that jumped in the canal and drowned.
The ultimate film, Gimme Shelter, coupled with fiercely critical reporting in the fledgling Rolling Stone magazine, became the basis for much of the mythology that has grown up around the event, Selvin says. But he sees its impact in the work of the musicians who were there.
It was a big moment of consciousness, and it was a pivot point for almost all the people who were deeply involved in it. The Grateful Dead shifted gears entirely from an electric acid rock band into the sort of country folk band of Working Man's Dead. I don't think the Stones ever matched the heights of their recordings ever again. I think that something scared them about Altamont, and they were never able to make records as fierce and committed as they had been before.
But the Rolling Stones' performance on that fateful day was, he says, truly legendary.
Grateful Dead recording engineer Bob Matthews played me his 16-track mix of the Stones set, which he recorded. It would be the greatest Stones live album ever. They played like their lives depended on it, and it might have been true.
I'm Bruce Robinson for KRCB's North Bay Report.